everyone, and welcome to episode 121 of Not a Real Job, a podcast about stuff hosted by people. I'm Chris, and I'm a people.
Yeah, I'm Joel, and I'm probably in the same camp, given the right circumstances. Man, I'm always so interested how you're gonna start things off.
I feel like it has declined significantly since the early days. Like, now we're just doing a show about stuff, and we're people. Like, we've really dropped the ball. We've dropped a lot of balls. Balls have been dropped.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even remember what it feels like to hold a ball.
You know, I can't say I could do that either. So I could remember that. So I guess we're pretty much in the same boat, you and I.
We're two ballless Joes.
Two balls and a ball.
Two floor balls.
Tell me how you are. I want to hear happy things. How are you? Are you happy?
I just had a really good manicure.
Cool. Yeah. What prompted this? Is this a regular occurrence in your life, or just
No? But I have a feeling it might become one. This was prompted by 2 years ago. I got Leah for Christmas. Like that we would do a couple's spa treatment, and she finally cashed in on that today.
Excellent. So was it just the manicure? Were there
just
other...
the manicure?
Okay.
After I got her that gift, I ended up having a massage. It was my first massage I'd ever had, and it was so unbelievably bad. I've more or less committed
sworn
to
that
never,
off
ever having a massage again in my life.
Man, that's a bummer. You're missing out on one of the great pleasures of life. You mentioned this. I've been thinking about getting myself one of those scheduled on the old calendar here. I'll take all your massages. How's that?
Yeah, I mean, someone may as well. Just to give you, like, I won't get into my massage story. Runs about 15 minutes to tell, and I really don't feel like getting into it right now. But just to give you a sample of it. My masseuse spent the entire 45 minutes burping loudly. And that's just one of the things that happened during it.
I mean, sounds great.
Frankly, I didn't love it. I didn't love it.
Yeah. Well, that's
This was at a luxury resort too.
Was it a client?
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
I think that makes it a lot more awkward.
A lot more awkward, yeah.
Oh, so man.
Anyway, we're not gonna delve into that any further. But
we'll skip on there.
But I've since had a manicure at another luxury resort that I quite loved, and so this manicure was excellent as well. I would say it was just as good.
Now, was this a Halifax based manicure?
This today's was. Yes. The previous one was not.
Right, because you said it was at a luxury resort, and you guys don't have those, right?
Not that I'm aware of.
Sure. Okay, that makes sense. Well, cool. I'm glad to hear your fingers are fingered. Well, moving on.
Yeah.
What should we talk about?
I mean, man, that is up to you. Like, do we want to steer towards the personal, or would you like a distraction from that?
Well, I mean, I guess we've hinted at it. I don't want to go too far down that camp.
Yeah, so I was going to be delicate with that. Sure. So it's whatever you want to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't want to air too much dirty laundry, except to say that the past week and a half has been maybe the worst week I've had in years. And I don't think that's hyperbolic saying that.
I would hope not.
Yeah, so it's been rough. A lot of stuff happening on the personal front. I won't get into it too much, but combined with a lot of things simultaneously happening on the business front, not necessarily bad things on the business front, just like big deadlines, new projects coming on. It's easy enough for me to get overwhelmed by that side of things and how much there is to do at all times, but then to combine it with the various ways that my personal life has been challenged in the past week. It's a lot. It's a lot, and it's hard to deal with. That's kind of the very broad strokes version of that.
So I'm going to ask something that I have a feeling like all our fans are currently asking themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a tough couple weeks. You know, knowing a little bit more about it than our listeners do, I can say I hope it's one of the worst weeks you've had in recent years, or that's even sadder.
I get what you mean.
Yeah.
I hope you had a bad week.
Yeah, you understand. You understand. Yeah, what I'm saying.
I got
yeah.
you.
If this is typical, that would be
different story.
Yeah. How's your butt disease?
Oh man. Well,
has
that's
flared up.
Well, no. So the butt disease is not flared up. This is a callback for you new listeners. Of which
Chris has had some issues. He's had a case of wrong butt for a while.
But no, I mean that I actually will say that illness and sickness has been part of it. It was like the
things
started like last Friday. So I guess like eight or nine days ago. And then like that Wednesday came and immediately just came down with a cold, like fine, that's whatever. But just compounded by the other things that had been happening before that, the things that have been happening since, like all the busyness of the business side of things. It's like it doesn't feel just like a cold. It feels like so much more, but realistically it's not, but it's still just, you know, it, all that stuff kind of gets mixed together and feels just makes everything feel like 10 times worse. So, but no butt disease. Thank goodness.
Oh man. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Focus on the positives.
That's exactly it. I think they say, you know, count your blessings. So
they do say that, but
if you're not chalking that one up as a blessing,
I mean, I choose not to count them, but some people do, I guess. I don't know.
You know, this is where there's one set of footprints in the sand because, you know, you can,
because I left and I turned around and kept going back the way I came from. So there's that. That's the thing we just talked about. I want to hear about you though.
Uh-huh.
You're traveling a lot.
Yeah.
But it seems like less.
I had a lighter, end of summer than I have had in previous years. Things are around. I've got a few trips. I've got three trips that I'm aware of before the end of the year. But I'm sure there will be more. I'll probably be on the road every second or third week until the end of the year.
Which isn't terrible.
It's not unsustainable, no. The big difference is that I have not been drinking. So that's... Mm-hmm.
So how's that going?
Yeah, so today is 9 weeks without drinking. And to clarify, because I'm not turning this into like a podcast all about that. It had started as just a needed to get healthier, felt like a pretty good part of the diet to attack and to get healthier, lose some weight and stuff. And now I kind of imagined it would be a 2-3 week thing. Now it's just kind of a personal challenge to keep this going.
Just to see how long you can make it before.
Which I guess has because it's alcohol, when you say something like that, people automatically assume, well, what do you mean, you know, to see if you can make it? That must mean you're some horrible alcoholic and, you know, we hate those people. So what do you mean? But I mean, it's like anything that you cut out of your diet. There's a challenge in place. If someone attempts to go gluten free and then 10 weeks later has some bread, we don't think they're a monster. So I just find like the longer I go without drinking, there feels like more and more pressure to never drink again, even though that was never the intention.
Sure. Now I have to ask, is it a thing that you find you miss more than you expected that you did? Or is it actually, has that not been a factor?
No, I'd say I miss it exactly as much as I expected, which is to say extremely.
Mm-hmm.
But
not enough that you like feel persuaded or compelled to go back at this point, at least.
No, I would say, you know what, honestly, the amount, you know, being a drinker and, you know, drinking was a significant part of my identity and certainly my hobbies. were very much focused on vices like that. I'd say I was a little surprised to find chemically it wasn't a challenge. Like, you know, I never felt like at a certain point my body, you know, was craving it more than I expected. It's habitual, like everything else. I found the habits to be extremely strong and to be the things that I've had to really focus on the most targeting. Like if I hadn't replaced some of my habits around drinking with other habits, it would be impossible. And I've certainly found that part of it exactly as difficult as I imagined it would be, which is to say near insurmountable at times.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like you've surmounted it pretty well.
Yeah, for, I would say for now, I just, you know, it's interesting because again, it's drinking and there's so much to, I mean, that conversation is so fraught. Yeah. That if you know, frankly, even now I'm worried that someone's going to listen to this podcast and go, Joel's a drunk or something, or on the other side, think that I am trying to be, what's the word, like judgmental about it.
Well, I mean, let's
you know, I would love to dig into this. Though I do have some concern that somehow this is personally, I don't know, damaging by talking about it, but I guess I'm willing to take that risk.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm curious about is like, you're not doing it for sort of, it's not a stand you're making for moral reasons or anything. It was a health thing. So let's like work with the assumption that you will probably drink again someday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How has this changed that? Like, do you see your relationship changing with drinking in the future? Like, is it something where you'll come back, but maybe in moderation or not like you weren't moderated before, but you know what I mean? Where it's,
you know, it's like funny. Isn't it so difficult that every declarative statement we make, I feel like we're going to feel like we have to somehow minimize. Can we just make a blanket statement that we're going to talk honestly and not need to, you know, sugarcoat elements of this going forward? I think it'll make the conversation easier.
Sure. I'll probably still fail at that,
though. Yeah, and me too. But I think for our listeners, if you hear something that makes you pause, apply a mitigating balm to it. Yeah, my relationship to alcohol has certainly changed in that. Again, it's interesting that about a week and a half to 2 weeks into this, I started listening to, I've had the book on the shelf forever, but hadn't read it, but I started listening to the audiobook of The Power of Habit by, I'll look up the author, because I'll probably make it my recommendation at the end of this. You know what? I definitely am. The Power of Habit, which is, you know, a book all about how habits are formed and how you can change your habits and, you know, and how much, so much of our behavior is habitual. And that's really what it found is they were talking about, one of the first stories in the book is the idea of this woman who had, you know, I think she was a smoker. She was a drinker and, you know, was overweight and had gone through all these challenges and, you know, and had never been successful at kind of changing her behavior, losing weight, you know, even in her career. I'm missing a lot of the story here, but even her career was not going the way she wanted. And then, you know, they cut back to or jump forward 2 years and she's in shape. She's just run her like fourth marathon. She's done the traveling she wanted. She's more successful. And they're like, what changed? And they work it back to the main thing that she changed was, I believe for her, it was smoking. That there was I think they call it an anchor habit maybe, or a keystone habit. The one that everything kind of hangs on to make other changes in life more difficult. And for me, I think my anchor habit was definitely the cocktail at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would immediately set the tone for the rest of my evening. After, you know, a cocktail at whatever time I get home, the rest of the evening is kind of structured around, well, having another cocktail, not going for the run I probably should have. maybe not doing the errands I'd want to. I was like, well, I probably shouldn't drive now, you know, not getting drunk, but just like there's that habit had informed so much of my recreation. Mm-hmm. That changing that has meant I'm, you know, frankly, what I do when I get home and want, that drink, which I still do. It has been about, okay, inserting another habit there. I'm still going to have an after work habit to kind of switch out of work mode. It's changing that into a healthier one. That's really been how my relationship with alcohol has changed, is making sure that when I do have a drink again, when I do start drinking, that it's not out of pure habitual behavior, that it's with a purpose, that it is with, you know, a social action, or you know, even if it isn't at a party or gathering, that it's not just, well, this is what I do at this time every day.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. Sort of, removing it from that sort of, I don't know. I can't think of a good metaphor, but yeah. You know, it's sort of, I mean, for me, like I can't point to like a specific thing that I changed or like removed as an anchor habit, I guess. Mm-hmm. But something that I would say I developed as an anchor habit was waking up early in the morning and starting work mm-hmm. early. It's like starting mm-hmm. work by 7:30 or so, like making that change and really like committing to that change. I notice now when I don't do it that I feel worse. Like I missed something.
Yeah.
I have an objectively like worse day. I objectively like feel worse about myself if I don't do that, which I mean, that probably isn't the healthiest thing either to, you know, have that kind of reaction when you miss a day or whatever, like it's normal, but that's the rational side talking. But yeah, like having that sort of healthy or motivating habit in place, I can see how you would want it to be something that is going to be, you know, beneficial and helpful all around and healthy. And yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Totally. I think that's really been it, is really understanding how much of your behavior is habitual, which is to say almost all of it is habit. Very, very few. I mean, especially if you think a certain way about free will, you know, itself. I'm certainly one of those people who don't necessarily believe in the concept of free will. There is no mind-body separation. So kind of coming to grips that in the same way that the leg I put my, you know, the way I put my pants on is a habit, in the same way what I do when I get home after work is as ingrained a habit as that. And potentially just as difficult to change. If I decided tomorrow that I was putting my pants on, you know, the other leg first, that would be an incredibly difficult habit to break. Yeah. And we accept that's normal. But then when we say, well, why don't you just run more? Why don't you eat better? Why don't you stop drinking? We approach those as if they're all conscious decisions that we make each time, when they're not. They're habits and will be just as difficult to break. And then that's why not even thinking about breaking habits. You can't really break habits. You can just replace them with other habits.
Which is why, I mean, it's interesting. It's all so interconnected, right? Like there are all these micro habits, I guess, that inform mm-hmm. the larger habit. So it's really kind of about setting yourself up in basically in a way to like keep yourself from failing. It's in a way, like to me anyway, it's not almost about creating a new habit or replacing a habit with a new habit or something, but it's about setting up like this framework basically. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe for you, and this is complete supposition here, mm-hmm. but it wouldn't have just been easy to replace that after work cocktail with something else. It had mm-hmm. to be removing that prospect of alcohol from the equation entirely to make it possible to make that one change. And like, similarly, like for me, waking up early in the morning, it's not just that I set an alarm and get up early. It's also that my entire day has been shifted around sort of an earlier routine, getting mm-hmm. to bed early, like having lunch before noon, like, you know, all these different things. It's sort of this domino effect, and you have to set yourself up at every point along the way to make that one thing sort of impossible to avoid or impossible to fuck up.
Yeah. I think you've just made the perfect comparison. is, yeah, me getting my alcohol in a way that I felt was healthier involved doing or not doing the same thing consistently every day, in the same way that they say that people who want to get up early for work, you know, during the week also need to get up early on the weekends. Like, yeah, you need to remove the prospect sleeping in is something you no longer do.
Yeah.
Or if you do it, it's a luxury and it's different. It's outside of the habit, you know, it's like not brushing your teeth almost. Like, that habit you're not going to break. Ideally, you're always going to want to brush your teeth and always going to feel gross and weird if you don't. But you know what? One day you may not have brushed your teeth that day because you never left the house. That's okay. But you've still got the right habit in place. So on vacation, you might sleep in a couple extra days, but your association with that habit is that you've still done something that's different and exotic and outside of the norm. And ideally, alcohol is different because it also has a chemical addictive component to it. But so do most things. So ideally for me, when drinking comes again, it is outside of the habit. The habit is no drinking.
Yeah, I think it's really about just creating an environment where you can't fail, and that
mm-hmm.
or not that That's you can't it. Fail.
No, like, no, I think you did, like, you can't fail in that. And maybe I'm going a different direction than you were thinking, but like, failure is not an option because there's no such thing as failure once you've broken a plan. Like, you didn't fail at brushing your teeth today if you didn't brush your teeth, because that's not, there is no fail state there. It's just you have a habit and sometimes you do something that's opposite of that habit. And I think that that's probably a much healthier way to think about all of our habits.
I guess more what I mean is basically mm-hmm. like, I keep using the word fail, but that's probably not the right word. But basically like just creating the best environment where it's like,
yeah,
where it's like, well, of course I'm brushing my teeth. I have to brush my teeth. Or it's just like, it's, you set things up in a way that makes it inevitable. It's that think to me, it's like that idea of inevitability. Like, it's not that you like, and of course we're all going to screw it up sometimes or, you know, it's not going to work out the way we thought. But like, if you can sort of put all your ducks in a row in a way that the logical conclusion of that is executing the habit that you want, mm-hmm. I think that makes it so much easier, because then it's not even about like, you have to be, oh, okay, I brush my teeth. Like, I need to do it. Yeah. I need to do it. It's like, it's the natural progression of things. So it's not like a conscious mental effort. Like, I guess that's ultimately what it is to me. It's like removing that mental effort from the equation.
Yeah.
How can it just be the most natural thing in the world?
And that's why what I had to do for the first few weeks, while the habit of the cocktail after work was so strong, I replaced it with running. I went home. I hurt my knee really bad.
Dude, I know the feeling.
Yeah, exactly. So now I haven't run in 2 weeks, which I really need to get back out there. But I also haven't had a drink, so I'm not that worried about it. But I was running every day, which someone as out of shape and overweight as I am was not. I shouldn't have. That was too much. I wasn't giving myself a break. But I think the long term, it was certainly beneficial. Because what it would do is like, well, I get home, I drop my work bag, put my like quickly, as fast as I could, get running ready and head out the door.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's even the kind of thing, like for me, like I would have my running sneakers like right next to the door.
Yeah.
I have my like jogging shorts or whatever. Like, it's like, it's again, like about creating that framework that makes it like you step through the door and it's like, well, this is what I have to do. It's all, yeah. It's there.
And it was like, okay, I have to go for a run now. Having a drink before my run would be shitty.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a bad drink and a worse run. So that just kind of, again, like removed it from the equation.
And can I suggest, also randomly, mm-hmm. I'm still having knee problems. It's been, I think almost, I don't know.
It's been probably like a year.
Yeah, getting there. But the elliptical has been great.
I bought a rowing machine.
Rowing's great too. I love rowing. If I had more room in my apartment, I would definitely get one. Get a rowing
machine. I have that one. I haven't used it yet though.
Oh man, it's the full Kevin Spacey House of Cards thing. Just
mm-hmm.
Think of that as you do it and you'll feel so powerful.
That's, I mean, the thing that, that show is, I've only watched the first season, but it's.
Oh, Joel, don't tell me that.
There's a lot of TV.
That's true, but it's, that's one of my favorites. It's okay. And
yeah. It's a great show.
Anyway, so yeah,
habits are interesting. And just to maybe put a cap on that, I'm certainly happy to keep going. But just if people are wondering, yeah, I haven't weighed myself over the last 9 weeks intentionally. But I'd say based on my clothes fitting and how seatbelts on airplanes and stuff fit now, I'm probably down about 15 pounds. And I just look, my skin's better. There are less circles under my eyes. I look better. So it has been beneficial health-wise. My resting heart rate's lower. My blood pressure, again, I haven't checked any of these things. The day my doctor was like, you should probably cut back on drinking, I took that as well. I had her write down no alcohol on a piece of paper so I could say my doctor told me. So that was 9 weeks ago. So I don't know exactly how everything is, but I'm expecting once I go back probably next week that to get all that checked. But I'd imagine that the gains have been significant, and that's without changing my diet at all,
which is amazing. That's huge.
That's starting tomorrow. I'm doing full. I'm breaking all my habits around food starting tomorrow. Which, if you're interested in doing that, look up Penn Jillette weight loss. He did a video on Big Think about breaking his food related habits so he could lose 100 pounds over a winter. Which is my intention as well. I hope to lose 100 pounds by my birthday, which involves breaking all my food-related habits. And I will keep you posted.
Amazing. We'll keep supporting you through that.
Thank you.
Because that's awesome. That's good to have that goal in mind. I believe in you.
I appreciate that. You know what? I'm an all-or-nothing person. I think most people who know me know that I'm certainly a no-half-measures person. So breaking habits has a much more, it's a challenging concept, but I think as a result is much more appealing to me and something I have much, probably likelier
success with. More consistent and more reliable and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it's interesting, especially around weight loss. Like, you know, I'm comfortable saying, because I mean, I don't think it would be a surprise to many people, but I'm a very overweight person. And like the idea is, well, you should, you know, try to lose 1 pound a week, you know, that to be sustainable. And like, does anyone know that many people or anyone who has lost a significant volume of weight that way? I don't think that happens all that often. Like that means that if I wanted to get down to approaching my ideal weight, it would take 2 years. That's impossible.
Yeah. I think that the way that you're doing it sounds very, very reasonable, very believable and very achievable. So
I guess we'll see.
All the best.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, hopefully we'll record at least another episode before February.
Well, I've got a lot of free time now, Joel, so I think we can make that work.
Well, that's something, you know, silver linings. So that's my stuff. Anything else? Do we want to talk about, and I'm throwing this out there, do we want to talk about any new Mac phone iOS stuff? People used to expect that of us.
You know, I actually don't feel like I have anything to say on that subject. Cool. I think, I mean, it's been so long since the release. It's been a couple months now. It is what it is.
I'll quickly talk about the iPhone 7. Just two quick things.
Okay.
First, the camera is insane. I cannot.
Plus. You've got the plus.
I have the 7 Plus. I can't get over the low light photos it's taking, which they didn't even really advertise that much of a regular camera improvement, but I think just the stabilization might be a little bit better in this one. So it takes really good low light. The portrait mode's just a lot of fun. And again, I can't, like, the fact that it's doing that all in software, like instantly, is pretty amazing. And I have the matte one and I'm trying to go caseless, and it is slippery as hell. Like, it is the slipperiest iPhone they've ever made, I'd say.
Interesting. You got to get one of those rings that you stick on the back of the phone.
You know, I would consider it. But yeah, no, it's good. The kind of the glass around the camera bump is chipping a bit, but that's fine. I'm not going to worry about that. Anyway, it's great. New home button feels great. Headphone jack thing has bothered me a couple times, but not significantly. I'd say I think the world will move on.
Yeah. I mean, it has no choice.
New Google phones look good.
Yeah.
In that they look like iPhones. And I say that as a, you know, not to be shitty, but they look also good. Yeah. But I mean, they vertical, vertically integrating, you know, owning the hardware, obviously HTC is involved, but you know, obviously it's all dictated by Google, dictating the hardware, dictating the software, obviously is a good way to go. And I think Google is, you know,
finally I think the phone's up to that.
Yeah. I think the phone's probably going to do quite well. I wish them the best. I have a feeling that, people at Apple are, what's the word? You know what? No, I'm not going to say that. Just saying with everything that Samsung's going through, it's nice to see that there's another viable competitor out there for the next few quarters as Horace from, Asimco, tweeted, like, it's looking like we might have the first quarter where only one smartphone manufacturer has 100% of the profits, since Samsung was the only other smartphone maker that was turning a profit. With their potential up to $28 billion loss they're about to take. Apple may go a quarter where they're the only people in the smartphone game making a profit.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Google would be the logical addition to that group. You know, I think they're the only other company, other than Microsoft, who I think Microsoft has kind of bungled their mobile strategy pretty thoroughly.
I mean, at least Microsoft has, you know, they have cash in the bank and can make another shot at it at some point, but that's not within the next few quarters.
Yeah, definitely. I think Samsung, Google, Apple, Microsoft would probably be the only four that I think at this point can make a go of smartphone manufacturing, because I think they're the only ones that have the ability to do that integrated experience. Samsung uses Android, but it's pretty tightly controlled version of Android that they do a lot of customization with. So, I mean, maybe Amazon, but I think it's clear that while they could do it, they have not done it. So, I don't know. It's an interesting point in the market right now.
The fact that Amazon's having success on the home side of things
with Echo.
They're probably not going to try the smartphone thing for a little while. The other player, of course, would be, but I don't know how they could do it with their relationship with Apple. Like, did Foxconn buy Sharp? Like, that got approved, right? Like, I think,
I don't know if it did, but you know, I don't know that could happen. I mean, they might have the capability, but I don't see sort of. I think the design market in China is still refining. By design, I mean just, you know, having the capabilities of being able to create the kinds of holistic experiences that Google and Apple are capable of. I don't know that sort of mindset has infiltrated the Chinese design world yet. Not to say that they won't. I mean, it certainly will happen. I just don't see it happening for another
couple and not
years.
To say that either of us is even approaching expert or potentially, at least for me, approaching even educated level of the Chinese market. I'm no concept of that.
I've been paying more attention. It's interesting. There's a lot of stuff happening with companies like DJI.
Oh man, did you read that article about the 3D robotics?
No, I read the one about the drone, the robot warfare competition thing.
Oh,
on the Verge. We'll have to link that up. It's great. There's a video and an article about DJI sponsoring this robotics competition in China. And it's insane. It's crazy. I think that's where you're going to see Chinese companies excelling is in these. I don't want to say that smartphones are like unsophisticated or anything. They certainly are, but these like more mechanical applications of technology, artificial intelligence, things like that. I think that's going to be where you're going to see a lot of really interesting stuff happening.
Yeah, exactly. I think, so to tie a couple ideas together, the article that I was reading, it was Chris Anderson, the from Wired. He was he founded a drone company, and it was basically like that drone company is no longer making drones. And the article is like, what happened? You know, their spectacular rise and fall. One of the big parts of it was DJI came out with a drone that was a fraction of the price that quickly became adopted as like the standard, the DJI Phantom, Chinese company that, again, like they just own the experience. And because of, you know, the Chinese manufacturing is just so far ahead of anywhere else in the world, both the capacity and the technical ability. Like if, you know, and that's what I'm thinking, like Foxconn and Sharp, you know, if a manufacturer wants to get into the product market, they can do things around scale and price that an American or European company could can't do.
It's almost to me like one of the reasons that I just see like that I don't see smartphones as being like a thing that, I mean, Chinese companies certainly have delivered smartphones and will continue to, but I just think the growth is going to be on drones and robotics, and it's going to be because not only do they have the capability to produce them, but they're like, they actually, because there's so much manufacturing production over there, it actually behooves them to be good at those things because those are things that benefit them in a way that they don't necessarily benefit us in America. Like developing amazingly sophisticated robots helps them produce things for cheaper and, you know, maintain the lead on manufacturing that they have.
And not just produce or manufacture, but around shipping, you know, autonomous shipping boats, you know, that have a skeleton crew or no crew at all. Autonomous
drone delivery planes, you know, lifting cargo onto these ships, and agriculture at mass scale, you know, when you have a billion plus people that you need to feed, what a, you know, an amazing way to automate that process. I think there, it's just the incentives are aligned there in a way that I think those are the industries that in 20 years, they're going to be unparalleled. I mean, in a way, they really already are. DJI is the biggest drone company in the world, the biggest robotics company in the world by some measures. It's just like this alignment of factors that makes China, like, for those technologies at least, like, they're going to wipe the floor with the rest of the world, and good on them for that. Like, that's amazing. We're going to see really amazing things happen because they have those capabilities and the incentives to create that technology.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's extremely interesting. And obviously I think it's going to be a massive challenge to any American companies and Silicon Valley kind of in general of the Chinese just being such a much more sophisticated market with that sort of thing. I mean, it's what Tim Cook, you know, was saying when he's on Charlie Rose, like the reason why everything's produced in China is not I think wrongly in many cases, but the perception is just, well, they do it there because it's cheaper. But like, think about that. Like, why is it cheaper to manufacture things? It's not just the cost of labor. That's the easy thing. Well, they're not paying their people. Like, and of course, you know, there's lots of work to be done around that, and not to undermine that at all. But the one of the biggest reasons why it's cheaper to manufacture things in China is because they have people who know how to manufacture things. He's like, we can put all the top people who make bits for CNC milling machines in America in one room. In China, there are tens of thousands of people who are experts in making, you know, milling bits for CNC machines.
Well, it kind of goes back to what we were saying, or what I was saying at least before, about like setting up this environment for these habits, you know, setting up where it's inevitable. It's the logical conclusion is that you execute that habit because you've set up everything in your day to point to making that habit happen. Mm-hmm. It's the same in China with manufacturing. Everything about that economy and about the infrastructure that they've created around manufacturing just makes it inevitable. They've, you know, it's you've got with an iPhone or something, it's, you know, all the pieces are made in the same town and the factories are probably connected in some way so they can move components easily between them. The people are set up with the manufacturing knowledge. Like it's a similar type of thing. Everything has been set up in a way that they will have the most success at that because it's ingrained in the way that it works over there, the way that the culture works, the way that the industry works, the way the infrastructure has been set up. It's just, it's that logical conclusion there.
Absolutely. And I think what that's leading to is economically, obviously the tipping point of, you know, the where capital is going to be stored in the world is certainly going to make a shift. Which I think is interesting and we're obviously probably something
too dumb that, to comment on it.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that far smarter people, I bet, have really interesting stories about, but that's obviously probably the, I'm sure we've already crossed the line
somewhere. You know, that's what we do here. We cross lines.
We're transgressive. I think that's what people tune into the show for, is for that real Bill Hicks style dose of realism.
Yeah. And that's what we deliver, really.
I don't think Bill Hicks was that funny. That's the real transgressive thing to say.
Ooh, before we get too deep into there, let's go to now I only say that I don't know Bill Hicks well enough, but I'm sure our listeners do.
It's like saying I don't think George Carlin was all that funny. Like, for some reason, that's an extremely controversial thing to say. But yeah,
controversial to a very specific set of people. Which,
yeah,
saying that is probably
boring people.
Yeah. We're crossing lines. That's what we do.
Yeah.
So let's skip over and go to the next segment.
I think Jimmy Fallon's probably the greatest living comedian. Now that's obviously a joke, because he's not funny.
It's not even funny to joke such terrible things.
You know, there's someone out there who thinks that.
Yes. Well, there are a lot of people. Clearly he's doing pretty well. Anyway, yep. Every episode of the show, we share a recommendation with you, something that we've bought recently on Amazon that we think you should buy too. And if you buy it through our link at notarealjob.com/episode-121 or notarealjob.com/gear, you are going to be able to buy it as well. And if you buy through those links, we get a tiny percentage of the profit, which is pretty great. Helps support hosting costs and all that good stuff. What have you got for us this week, Joel?
You know what? Obviously, I said I was going to do this a while ago, and I'm going to stick.
You're a man of your word.
I am. I'm doing the power of habit, why we do what we do in life and business. And another thing, if you're into advertising like me, there are quite a few sections about advertising that are super interesting. How Febreze went from an accidental creation to an unsuccessful marketing campaign to being a huge product and inventing a brand new category of products. Very interesting about that. And I kept going back to the toothbrushing well, because it's got some information about our old friend Charles C. Hopkins and how he marketed toothpaste back in the early 1900s. Claude C. Hopkins.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Man, because okay. I'm looking at the book is by Charles Duhigg.
Yeah.
So I went with Charles C. Hopkins. That didn't feel right when I was saying it.
I'm glad you recognized the problem.
How embarrassing would that have been?
I mean, he is.
Oh, you think I should still be embarrassed?
Yeah.
I'm not.
Okay. Sorry. I'm going to recommend the Philips Hue LED starter kit. This is,
should I get that?
Oh man, I think you should. So I bought the.
How much? Okay, well, that's Philips Hue.
I'm going to give you the full rundown, Joel. Just bear with me. I bought the starter kit, which comes with the hub, the Hue Bridge. I got the 2.0 Jesus version, Christ. Which is great.
Are you rich?
Well, no, here's the thing.
Are you a rich person?
So I got the hub. The hub mm-hmm. is great. That's how it connects to your internet and all that stuff. It's HomeKit compatible because this is Bridge 2.0. That was something I really wanted. So it's the hub plus two bulbs, and they are the white bulbs. So I didn't get the color bulbs yet. I wanted to see if the system worked, and it's great. And it's $70 for the two white bulb plus hub. So pretty affordable compared to the colored bulbs. I love it. It's amazing.
Tell me why you need smart light bulbs that don't change color.
So for me, this was about dimming. I live in an apartment. Can't really change. I can't, you know, put in a dimmer switch and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Just not an option for me. So I wanted to be able to dim my bulb at night so I could, you know, stay up and do some reading without being kind of blinded or screwing up my sleep, things like that. So that's why I did this. Now the plan is to grow the system a little bit. So I do want to get some colored bulbs, saving, you know, waiting a little bit longer for that. But, for $70, being able to have dimming bulbs, being able to set up an alarm every morning where the lights go on at a certain time and all that kind of stuff. The Alexa control is great. HomeKit is amazing. And yeah, I love it.
I just sent you the link to it. Tell me if this is it, because I'm going to buy this now if it's only $70.
Let's see. Yes, that's the one.
Okay, I'm buying this.
And what's nice is that if you only do white bulbs. I want
this for my office at home.
Yeah, it's great. And it's, you know, it's an expandable thing, so you don't have to buy everything at once. The bridge supports a bunch of lights, so you can, I think, up to 50 lights, which is great. And yeah, it's just, it's so easy to set up. It's so reliable. It's so smooth. The bulbs, if you only go with white, are really cheap. You can get them as low as like $10, which is how much you'd pay for a regular LED bulb without the connected capabilities. So really easy to build out a pretty big system. And then you can kind of integrate the colored bulbs as you want over time, which is what I plan to do. I will say the Hue app is pretty terrible, but because it works with HomeKit, HomeKit is just so smooth and nice. And it's, you know, you can swipe up into control center and controller bulbs without even unlocking the phone. Like it's great. So you need the Hue app, unfortunately, but once it's set up, just go through HomeKit. It's better. And you, Joel, you have the Apple TV as well, right?
I need to change my shipping options here. I do have an Apple TV.
You've got the newest Apple TV, right?
Yeah, I do.
So with the newest Apple TV, that can act as your HomeKit hub. So you can control your bulbs remotely through HomeKit because it'll route through the Apple TV. Pretty cool. Yep.
Interesting. All right. Well, I just ordered this. And apparently I already had on my Amazon.com account a book called Reality in Advertising that I have no memory of adding to my cart, but I just bought that too. So I guess we'll see what happens.
We'll check in
a advertising weeks. Book from 1961. Sounds like something I would buy.
Yeah. That's pretty classic.
Should I get an Amazon Echo while I'm spending money? Doesn't work in Canada though, does it?
No, not yet. Yeah. Hold off on that and get the Dot when you can. The Dot's the superior experience in my opinion.
Really? But that's the little one.
Yeah, but
Don't I want it to talk to me?
It talks to you. I like the Echo, the small one, because it works with my own speakers. And everything else is the same. It's just, yeah, that's literally the, people, I think that the Dot is like a lesser version. The only thing that's lesser about it does everything exactly the same. The only difference is that the speaker is much quieter. But it gives you the ability to plug into your own speakers, which are great. So you can plug into Bluetooth speakers that you have, like wired speakers like I have. It's great. Yeah.
Dot. Speaking of speakers, we haven't done an episode since I bought my UE Roll 2 Bluetooth speaker, have we?
No.
It's fantastic. Wirecutter, or maybe it was Sweet Home, said it was the best USB speaker, and it's fantastic. It looks kind of junky, like most speakers do. It's like sport themed, but it's waterproof. It comes with a pool floaty.
Oh, nice.
So I hang it like over my shower head in the morning to listen to my podcasts and stuff, and it's really loud. It pairs well. So anyway, also that
recommended. Lots of recommendations this week. So go out and support capitalism.
I hope the AirPods come out soon.
Yeah, soon. Give it time.
I'm looking forward to those.
Well, anyway, we've been going on for a long time. We should probably wind this thing up. You can find us all over the internet. NotARealJob.com, of course, is our home base. You can find us separately at ChrisVanPatten.com or JoelKelly.ca. We're also on Twitter at ChrisVanPatten, at JoelKelly, at NARJCast.
I'm going to be redoing my website. I bet by the time we do the next episode, it'll all be done.
Awesome. So keep an eye out for that. Do you want to give a shout out to friend of the show, Pat Cartelli, who has a new podcast called Repeater? It is a little show about big songs. Basically, every episode they bring in a guest, usually a comedian or someone in the entertainment world, to discuss a song that is very meaningful to them. And then they have a cover of the song. Although I'm not sure if the cover is included on the podcast, but if you're in New York, they do a live show. You should come out to that. And all the information, the link to subscribe to the show and everything is over at repeater.show. Mm-hmm. So go check it out.
It's a great really PCast. Cool. Pat's an awesome dude. And he had the singer from Weedus on. Like, that was super cool.
Yeah, yeah. They talked about Teenage Dirtbag, which was a lot of fun. Yeah, we're big fans of Pat. He has a co-host as well. We don't count him. It's Pat's thing.
Couldn't even name him.
I could, but
I couldn't.
Well, and I think on that note,
that's sorry, so Evan. Mean. What if by chance Evan listens to this podcast? I'm so sorry. That was a goof. That was
Joel.
Mean.
You took it too far.
I'm sorry, Evan. It's Evan, right?
I think that's gonna do it for us. We will talk to you soon. Hopefully not too long. And
it's gonna be forever.
We love you all.
Yeah. Bye. Bye, everyone. Fuck, I'm a dick.